Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 874. This episode brought to you by Scott eVest, which are clothes for pretty much all of your gadget carrying needs. So the clothes look great, and they are specially designed to carry all of your stuff hands-free inside. There's a pocket for everything you need to carry, your phone, your tablet, your headphones. You have a pocket for wallet. You even have a pocket for a laptop, sunglasses, anything you have. I mean, we've effectively, in our glorious age of technology, have all become like the junk lady from Labyrinth, where we just, I know when I travel, my bag basically just looks like a cross between like a Radio Shack and a CVS. It's just like a lot of wires and gadgets, and then also, you know, Tylenol and maybe, you know, Mucinex and maybe Pepto-Bismol, which you should always carry if you travel. But Scott eVest will give you pockets for all that stuff. So for a limited time, enter the promo code Nerdist for an extra 20% off at scottevest.com and use the promo code Nerdist. 20% off. There you go. Here's the Nerdist Community Corkboard. Say, I am hosting Red Nose Day on NBC. This will be a three-hour block of programming on Thursday, May 25th. At 8 o'clock, there's a celebrity American Ninja Warrior that's all done up for Red Nose Day. And then there's a special edition of Running Wild with Bear Grylls and Julia Roberts for Red Nose Day. And then I'm hosting a live broadcast from 10 to 11 Eastern Time. And it's live. We're going to be taking donations, and we have guests. A lot of super fun guests will pop in and out of the show. You got your Ben Affleck, your Jack Black, your Bryan Cranston. I'm hosting it, so it should be really fun. So please, please, please watch. Donate. Red Nose Day is an incredible cause for kids. Helps children in poverty, both in the United States and abroad. And it's legendary in England, and it's a third year here in America, and have already raised... I think hopefully this year we can see if we can get the total to about $100 million stateside. So please watch that NBC Thursday night, May 25th. And also Reddit user Pez Dispenser writes this. My wife's been a professional wedding portrait and event photographer for the past 12 years. She has a passion for teaching creativity and photography, became a faculty member for the photography school she graduated from, has toured the country teaching workshops. A month and a half ago, she started a YouTube channel to teach and give tips to inspire anyone who's interested in photography to get out, see the world in new ways, and shoot. She's energetic, hilarious, contagiously happy. I would love if she got the attention she deserves. Her website is Get Crafty Photographers, and her YouTube channel is youtube.com. Get Crafty Photographers. Different than the Rick and Morty Get Swifty Photographers. Get Crafty Photographers. So that's for Pez D. Spencer. Also, I believe this is this I Am Burfunk? If I messed up your name, I'm sorry. You know, some of these are like reading license plates. Hey, Nerdist community, my cousin is combining science with art by making psychedelic prints out of topographical maps. Oh, that's an amazing idea. This company is called Beatnik Prints. They use brightly colored maps to make an assortment of home decorations and clothing. He started a Kickstarter to get some up and running and fully functioning. There might be some Nerdist folks who would get a kick out of it. Check out beatnikprints.com. Or search Beatnik Prints on Kickstarter. Fantastic. This episode is my old pal Bill Burr, who is promoting the new season of F is for Family, premiering May 30th on Netflix. He also has Bill Burr's Monday Morning Podcast, which you should listen to. This is his third time, a three-peat, if you will. That's sportsy terminology, because Bill likes sports. This episode also brought to you by Stamps.com. Save time and money. Grow your business. Look professional. You can mail any letter package using your computer, your printer, mail carrier picks it up. No more post office. Don't you want convenience and reliability and ease and flexibility? I want those things for you. Stamps.com brings all the service of the post office right to your fingertips. It's easy. They'll send you a digital scale, automatically calculate the exact postage, and they'll even help you decide the best class of mail based on your needs. No need to lease an expensive postage meter. Right now, you can enjoy the stamp service with a special offer, which includes a four-week trial plus postage and a digital scale without long-term commitments. Go to stamps.com, click the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in the promo code Nerdist. That's stamps.com, enter the promo code Nerdist. Stamps.com. Never go to the post office again. Here's the Nerdist Podcast, number 874, with Bill Burr. Katie, please roll the thing.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hey,
back to the podcast, Bill Burr. I can't believe I ran into you the other night. I've never run into you in Los Angeles before. I don't think
ever. Unless, outside of a comedy
outside
club.
Outside of a comedy club.
Yeah.
Just at a restaurant.
My parents were in town and visiting their new granddaughter. So we had an awesome time, and I had this major anxiety of them coming out and everything, because you'll always have that, like, you know, oh, did I do a good job? Am I a success?
Oh, the parents.
Yes. Am I worthy of you guys throwing your youth away? And then I just realized, like, they're not coming out to see. I mean, they want to see me, but they're coming out to see my daughter. So it's just like, oh, and I was joking on my podcast. It's like, oh, I'm just opening. I'm hosting.
Yeah, you're hosting. Yeah,
my daughter's closing it. Yeah. So everything.
It's funny, though, that you still feel that it's like, how many nights in a row can you sell out the Wilbur Theater to feel like, hey, I think I'm on to something here. I feel like maybe I'm doing it.
Yeah, you know, but because, you know, I don't know. I don't feel any different. That's basically it. You know, there's some people that are the exact opposite. First time they get a laugh, they're like, dude, I'm like semi-famous. I'm crushing it. I'll be on a bus. You know, there's that person who just – and those people, you know, God help them when it goes bad, because they go just as far down the other way. You know, right. that you know, that up and down thing. I don't do that. I just kind of look at it like, yeah, you know, I fooled them again. You know, there's always that thing as you're walking there, you're peeking out of the curtain. Did anybody show up? All right, we're having a show. Let's do it. So
I guess it depends on why you do it. Like, do you like doing stand-up or do you like being famous? And maybe there's kind of a mixture of right. There's a dash of something and a little bit of something else for
everyone. I love doing stand-up. And then the whole fame thing is I'm at a cool level. You know, people don't bug me. But I also think, like, to be honest, like, what fame was when I started in 92 and what it is now is completely different.
Right.
Back then it was just like, I mean, I don't know. I don't know. There wasn't all these cell phone cameras and blogs and social media and just every fucking thing you did. Like, I saw this poor bastard. He tried to be like, hey, man, going on tour. And he had a picture of him standing in front of, like, a private jet and a car and all that shit. And then he got on a commercial flight and someone followed him on Instagram, took a picture.
That was Bow Wow.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I wasn't trying to out the guy. But what – I mean, everybody
well, everyone,
knows.
It was a big story.
I know. Yeah. But I felt bad for the guy.
Yeah.
It's just like so much of it is like, you know, is like that level of shit now that, like, you never got busted. Like, you didn't have to show that you were living that lifestyle. Everybody assumed you did. Now you got to have that lifestyle. If you don't, you got to fake the lifestyle. And then everybody's like, I don't know. Everybody's like telling on everybody. If I followed Bow Wow on Instagram and then I saw him tweet and then on Instagram or whatever, and then I saw him on the flight, I'd be like, oh, man, I'd feel bad for the guy.
I mean,
maybe, I wouldn't want to try to, like.
Yes, I know, but I hear what you're saying.
Everybody wants their feet held to the fire until it's their feet.
Absolutely.
Give me a fucking break. Whatever.
Absolutely, but I also
nobody ever exaggerated.
No, I know, but it's all. But also, I mean, it is a. If people recognize you, it is a bold move to suggest this is what I am doing. If you know that people might recognize you. I mean, I guess I always just think, you know, make a joke out of it. Just take a picture of, like, the American Airlines and go, getting on the private jet. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Then it's funny. And no one, I don't know.
Whenever I see that shit, I'm like, oh, man.
Yeah. But it is the, you know, but it is, you know, it's also our fault for posting shit every day and trying to let people in and trying to go, this is, you know.
Absolutely. So, but I can still feel bad for somebody.
Yeah,
like,
I did.
Like,
I felt bad too.
That's also like a dude who's like, he was like a child star and shit. Like,
yeah,
who
yeah.
was really sitting there thinking at the age he was putting out albums, like, how do I top my last album? Right. I always have to feel there's adults behind that.
Oh, 100%.
So he's still trying to figure out who the fuck he is and all this stuff. And everybody's like coming at him probably saying, oh, you used to do this. Now you're doing that. So now he feels that he has to do that. And then he gets shit on anyways. It's like no matter what you do.
No matter what you do.
That's the internet. No matter what you do.
The internet is the world's largest hole-poking machine.
Yeah, you're going to get shit on.
It doesn't matter what it is. You will always get – you could – whatever achievement you feel like – you –
Yeah, but dude, what was up with that tie though?
Yeah, exactly. What?
But that tie though. Then they'll fucking take your head and stick it on something else. And it's always like – and you know who does it? Those people who have that little egg for a picture and like two followers. It's like, you fucking pussy. You just started this account to do this.
And
I've had fantasies of finding the fucking people. Like I've literally on like some of the shit that people say, and you know, that's what's funny. Like sometimes when you're listening to people, you know, it's so hard for women to do that, or it's so hard for this. But it's like, dude, everybody's getting. If you're on the internet, you're sitting on a Dunkin'.
Everyone getting shit, but also, you know, your comedy voice. There's almost like this Newtonian equal and opposite reaction because you know.
I don't know what that means.
You have very. It's so okay.
Is that neutrons?
No.
You going molecular here?
No, I mean in a way. It's just basic physics. So like,
there's a little shade there. It's just basic physics, but you know,
it's the equal and opposite reaction to like you're creating momentum because your comedy voice is aggressive at times. You are making strong statements about things. You're making it's like you are taking a stand about stuff.
Express my ideas loudly.
Yes, and so people feel like, oh, it's okay to come back at him like that, or maybe that's how he communicates, or maybe.
Are you going to make excuses for everyone on the internet through this? I mean, some can are they ever held accountable? Is it always like, well, that's his fault for getting on a stage?
I'm not blaming you. I'm saying understand because. A lot of times I feel like – and seriously.
I think – I got to be honest with you. I think everybody right down to companies should be aggressive. You should be aggressive with these people on the internet. You should go right back at them. You poke them back even harder. You find out where they live. You just give them – you got to – because it's the bully mentality. You go right back at them or you kill them with silence. You just figure out a strategy. But you got to have like a strategy. But these people who are like, you know – when people don't do shit and then they have to apologize for something that, you know, somebody else misunderstood, then the second you apologize, you're fucked. You know, unless you really did it, unless you really fucked up. Because right. I fucked up. I mean, I'm not saying I would ever apologize. If I fucked up, I would
Everyone.
Say, you know, yeah, I fucked up. But those people that are just like, oh, sorry, that was just, that was, I don't, I, you know, I was stuck in traffic. And then once you do that, it's just blood in the water. they just rip you apart. So you might as well go down swinging. I don't know how we got on this subject.
No, I mean, it's a great. It's, I don't know how I ever get on any subjects. We just yammer. But I do feel like there's a. I like to wield the human sword sometimes, where I just go, oh hey, you know, yeah, that really hurt my feelings, or like I was just having a weird day, or are you okay? Because that seems like
an aggressive.
No, if you come
at that like really hurt my feelings, you can actually fuck people up by doing that. That you don't get mad.
No.
Somebody was telling me they said that it was like, oh, so what exactly about the special didn't you like?
Yeah.
And then they're all like, oh, shit. Then you become like a person to them.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is that, you know, when you are presented in largely two-dimensional form to people, that third dimension, the dimension that humanity exists in, is literally not there. So they do not see you as a person. And so they feel like, oh, hey, you know, like I can rile this guy.
I don't give a shit whether they see me as a person or not. I just don't like people taking free shots. Like I always feel like I got to get, you know. I'm supposed to just sit there and take that?
No.
My wife will be like, just ignore it. Just plow ahead. But who gives a shit?
People I really like your wife, by the way. I've only met her for a few minutes the other night, but she was so cool. And she just had this real warmth around
her. Yeah, she does. She
was so lovely.
An amazing. My wife has an incredible vibe, which is why our baby is so chill. And everybody always goes like, and that's my most proudest thing. Other than when they say she's cute, they just say, oh, your baby is just so, she's so chill and so relaxed. And I'm thinking like, yeah, it takes after my wife. So I'm trying to bring my shit down. You know what I mean? Like try to be like more relaxed and everything, which is easy. Cause when she smiles, it just totally melts your heart. So it's hard to be like, you know, usually the wound up version of that I am. But when I am, I know what I need to do. Go work out. You know, go play drums or something like this, something to get it out of me so I can be like, get back into game show host mode is what I try to do.
I mean, how much of the guy on stage is the guy at home? I mean, obviously, everyone's
no, the guy on stage is me at my worst. Like, I am actually beyond that guy, stuck in traffic. I'm beyond that guy when I feel someone's trying to take advantage of me. Bullying is something that really gets me going. Like,
sure.
You know, I'm not like, you know, I had, you know, fights growing up. Who didn't? But like, I am not like a fighter or anything like that. But there's something about bullying that like I forget, you know, that I'm 48 and I haven't had a fight since fucking, you know, the 80s.
But isn't it odd that so many people don't realize, because a bully is basically someone who takes out their aggression on other people because they believe they will get away with it and there won't be consequences. And how many people online, I think, don't realize that if you said, you know, you're being a bully, they go, I'm not being a bully. You're rich. Like, no.
I wouldn't say you're being a bully. You got to come back. You have to insult the shit out of them. You really have to try. You know, you got to try to really hurt them. You really have to try and hurt them. And they know that. That's why those guys, they don't have the pictures. But if you can really go at them, you know, go after weight.
You can't
go
hurt
go after
them.
Their nose. Yeah, yeah,
no,
yes, you
don't
can.
Go after that stuff. Yes, it just brings absolutely. You down to their level.
No, it doesn't.
It does.
Yeah, well, good then.
No.
Good. Nah, you're bringing the knife to the gunfight. No. You're doing that. Just be nice.
Don't,
blah, blah, blah.
Don't bring any weapon to the fight.
No,
just don't go to the fight.
I know what you're doing. I know what you're
I'm
doing.
Not, I just...
No, because what you're doing doesn't work. That right there, I feel... is the basis of all political correctness, where we're going to create all these fucking nice words, and then if everybody says the nice words, then the shit that's really in their soul isn't going to come out.
Picking your battles and using your energy wisely. That's all it is. And it's not...
All right, fair enough. Fair
it's
enough.
Not. It's not wasting your energy on something that you know is just going to be a... I mean, how many...
If you can really hurt him back, I advocate it. I do. I do. I 100% advocate that. If you can say something meaner back to them that is not immature, that is victory. That
I mean,
is
listen,
joy that is Christmas in
but
my heart.
But if
I love seeing
but if
that.
You're trying to be meaner, then it's automatically, innately immature.
Come on, man. Did you see? You see when that kid was just punching the fat kid in the face, and the fat kid just picked him up
and
just
dropped him.
Oh
on
my
his
God.
Head.
I think I went to the gym 10 days straight just out of the
determination.
I screamed right. I was like, yeah, I was so psyched for that kid.
Don't think I haven't gone down the rabbit hole of bully beatdowns where, you know, it's like the piece of shit goes up like, yeah, this little pussy. And then this tiny little kid gets up and roundhouse kicks the guy in the face.
Although the actual show Bully Beatdown was pathetic because it was like the nerd. And it was like that movie, My Bodyguard. He gets some bigger dude to beat him up. And then the nerd's like talking shit. Like, yeah, now what do you got to say? And it's like, well, I'll say a lot of shit after the martial artist leaves.
I'm still going to. I know where you live.
Is this guy 24 security? 24 hours for the rest of your life?
I mean, believe me, I believe that there's more strength in not giving in to every emotion that you have. And I have them.
I believe in that,
I have them 100%. You know, like...
I believe in that, too, except 80% of the time on social media. Listen, dude, I'm not saying I respond to every single one of those.
Right.
But I got to tell you, though, if somebody comes at me and I look at their little fucking picture and I got something, yeah, I'm both barrels.
Yeah.
Right the fuck back at him.
Yeah, there was a guy... I mean, every once in a while, it gets under my skin to the point, And I recognize it sort of like... I'm starting to think comments for me are like alcohol. It's like, I don't know if I can handle them responsibly, so I should probably ignore – I should probably quit them the same. Because there was a guy
that –
You
just develop a tougher skin.
I don't have a tough skin at all.
You just develop it.
I'm not – I don't
have
it.
All you have to do is just picture the person sending it. You just picture their room. You picture their life.
Well, I didn't have to. There was a guy – I posted a picture of a fucking T-shirt that I was wearing, and this guy goes – I want to punch you in your unlevel teeth. He was like, you know, you're 45, get over it. And in other words, like, give up Star Wars or whatever. And I looked at the guy's picture, and it was an amalgam of literally every fucking, like, one continuous eyebrow all the way across, shaved head. It activated every molecule of rage in my body. And I wanted to, like...
You didn't tell him that he looked like he was in the Star Wars bar?
No.
He looked like one of the bounty hunters.
No. I responded with something light and...
You should have included him and then tweeted George Lucas. And be like, dude, I got a new idea for a character. This fucking guy is great. And he's on the dark side. It gives somebody for Luke Skywalker to fight. You should have him in the final episode he's in. He brings the lightsaber down and actually cuts his eyebrow in half.
He's like one of those old magnet games where he looks like the same head upside down as right side
Perfect.
Up.
There
yeah,
you
but
go.
I feel like giving into that is a victory for the other person because they were able to affect you. They were able to, you know, they're letting you, like, what they are trying to do worked, and then they win. Then they win.
They win what?
They walk away with the confidence that they riled you, and that is empowering to them.
Walk away to what? Do they even have another room? Walk away to what? The outside?
They just turn in circles.
Yeah.
In a 400
square. Yeah, you're making it seem like they ended up getting to the podium. You know what I mean?
I mean, it's kind of funny, this, you know, when people think like, oh, what do you get bothered for? Things are going okay for you. It's like, I'm not a sociopath. Like, I'm still a person. Like, you can't not.
I treat it as a sport, man. If it's somebody and I can get them back, I do it. And I have a great time. I read it back to my wife and she'll laugh and she'll be like, why did you say that? And I'll just be like, yeah, fuck this guy.
Does she?
And then they all do all this. All these people are going to listen now and then have the fucking, you know, no picture thing and insult me, whatever. Yeah. Like, that's going to, it's like, that's old. That's slipping on a banana peel. Like, this happens to me every time I talk about this on a podcast.
You know what, though? I think you have to be careful, though, because when your daughter starts to get older, if people start attacking her to get to you,
well, she's not going to be on social media.
Of course she'll be on social media.
She won't. Well, not as a child.
Every kid will be on social media. Every kid will have access.
I hate that attitude.
You don't think so?
That whole fucking panic of everybody's going to do this and you can't stop it and you got to get your kid in a fucking $50,000 a year fucking whatever the hell those private – what's Little League for kids when they go to school? Kindergarten?
I guess.
Yeah. This whole thing they got to
kids.
Yeah. Like, you got to do this and they got to be doing this. If they're not doing this by then, all this panic like – fucking, I've kind of, since becoming a parent, like, I avoid other parents. I like talking, like, you met my daughter the other night, you're like, oh, she's adorable. That was it. I didn't have to listen to you give me fucking 20 hours of advice because you had a 3-year-old or some shit like that.
Oh, does that happen a lot?
Dude, parents are like, there's very few cool parents out there. The very few. Like, what you should do when someone else has a kid, you just say, oh, he's a good looking kid. Oh, you know, blah, 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 blah. How old? Oh, that's great. Hey, just, you're going to watch the Celtics Wizards tonight? Have the decency to bring up some adult shit rather than just sitting there, oh, now he's scooting across the floor. I mean, just give the person a break from that. As much as they love the kid. But the last thing you want to do is that everybody sits there and they act like they're wearing a fucking lab coat. You know, and they're a pediatrician. They start giving you all of this fucking. And I just sit there looking like, what is this based on? You have a 2-year-old. Like, pre-med is like 4 years.
Yeah.
Even if you were in that shit, you'd only be halfway through.
Yeah. You might be flunking. Yeah. And you might be flunking out.
Yes. And you're not in any of this. So I just, I tune all of it out. And then I get quiet and then they get weirded out. And then they'll say to me like, yes, how are you enjoying being a father? And I'll just be like, it's good. Then they probably walk away like, he's not engaged.
I don't understand.
He's not. Yeah, we can't hang out with him anymore. And then that's perfect.
I almost said the dumbest thing to your parents. When you introduced me to them, you didn't immediately say they were your parents. And I almost go, oh, these are your parents? Because your wife is black.
Yeah, no, those are my wife's.
Your parents are the whitest people in the world,
and you are the
whitest guy in the world. And it wasn't.
She could have had a different Strokes upbringing. You have no idea.
Those
could have been the Drummonds.
That's very true. But it wasn't. It wasn't something I was trying to say to be funny or anything. Like, it was just a very sincere, like, oh, are these your parents? And then I caught myself before I said it, and I went back to the table, the lid, and I go, I almost said the fucking dumbest thing. And embarrass myself.
But I could have had. What if I had like the oldest manager team in LA? You know, there's still a couple of them left.
I guess there is still a couple. Yeah, there is still a couple left. But it was really nice. Do your parents enjoy being grandparents?
Yeah. No, I come from a big family and everything. So they're. I mean, I think that's what it was. All of these years, despite what you're achieving at your job, if someone doesn't do your job, it's like they can only give a shit about it so much.
Right.
So. This thing, having a kid now I can understand them on a whole other level now. And of course, they instantly know that I can understand them more the way they understood their parents more. And once you have a kid, then it becomes like this. Ah, this kind of like, oh, this is what life is for you. And now it's this for me. I'm not saying that's what life is and you have to have a kid. God knows there's too many fucking people out there. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that now becomes this shared experience in reality that we now have something more that we can just relate to on different subjects. Whereas before, you know, I was like their 47-year-old teenager who was going, oh, I got a new drum kit. Oh, let me show you my new drums. I learned how to play this week, you know? And they're just sitting there looking at and in the back of your head, like going, like, they had like a fucking 20-year-old by the time they were my age.
Oh, that
like
game sucks. I hate that game when I think about it. How old was my mom? Oh, yeah, she was, you know, I was 20 when my mom was my age. That hurts.
Yeah, but this is the piece I made. If you were just sitting here working at fucking Dairy Queen, or he had some fucking just jerk off job that you would, you know, the same job you had when you were in college or high school, and you didn't do anything with your life, and you didn't have a kid or anything like that, then I could see it bugging you. But if you're actually, it's not like you just sat on your ass and didn't do anything.
I mean, I guess I did for most of my 20s, but I just kind of I'm also very comforted by the fact that...
Well, I'll go out on a limb and say you're caught up with the rest of us.
I mean, things are okay.
Went right by us.
Things are okay. But I'm very comforted by the fact that you're 48 and you just had a baby, and my wife wants to have two kids, and she wants to start, like, next year. And, of course, that terrifies me. I'm like, wow. I mean, I don't think I could have had a kid when I was younger. There was no way I was responsible.
You could have done it, and I could have done it, and we wouldn't have been good dads.
No.
That's how I look at it. So it's... You know, it is what it is. I lived my youth into my golden years, and now I'm living – I'm doing like a Tarantino movie where you switch it around a little bit. So then now I'll live the second act in the third act of my life,
I'm going to have to be comfortable with the fact that some places I go, people are going to go, oh, is that – are you with your grandpa?
No, they're not going to think that. No, because you stayed in shape.
I did stay in shape.
Yeah, that's the thing. When people say to me like you're an old dad, it's like, dude, I can do more pull-ups than most fucking 28-year-old dads. Okay, and I'm not talking about L.A. dads or New York dads. I'm talking about on-the-road dads, those people you meet after the show, and you're like, I got this guy by like 5 years. You find out they're 12 years younger than you, and it's like, what the fuck happened to you? And it's just like – and the thing is, too, is once you – it's hard to get it back, man. Like if I can tell anything to anybody, it's just keep – do something every day active, even if you just stretch, because just the level of misery that your fucking life is going to be.
Well, I mean, it's, you know, when you see people who are elderly and they can't really move and everything's sort of frozen, it's, you know, that's what I was always.
And all they can do is waddle over to their keyboard and write something mean to you and me. Just because we still have movement.
Did you see the Logan movie? Did you see the last Logan movie?
I don't know what that is.
Okay, no. So it was the Wolverine movie.
His name's Logan.
Logan, yeah. His real name is Logan.
Logan what? It's a good name.
Logan is I don't know. That's the that Logan is the character Hugh Jackman played. It's not his real name. His real name is James Howlett. But anyway,
is James Howlett his alter ego?
James Howlett was his birth name, and then he became Logan.
Bit by a Wolverine.
He
rabbit,
was not bitten by a Wolverine.
A radioactive pheasant.
No, it wasn't. You're thinking of Pheasant Man, but I think that movie is interesting because it's kind of at the end of his life. And he's kind of lost the majority of his regeneration powers, and that's what it starts to feel like as you get into your 30s. And when you're young, you bounce back, and then you take it for granted. And then you get in your 30s, and you're like, and then you just get a little less in shape each year. And then after 5, 7, 10 years, it incrementally is just like, what the fuck happened?
But you can't give in to buying the bigger clothes. You have to walk around in the shame of tight clothes and you just be so uncomfortable in your pants that eventually something's got to give. Okay. And they're not going to let you walk around with your button and zipper undone like you're in some fucking rock band in the 80s. That's not going to work at the office. You just have to fucking I went up to like $190 and, and then all of a sudden I had an event and I took out one of my suits and I was like, oh my God, I'm that guy who can't get a button because my fighting weight's about 172. So I was 20 pounds over. And I was so mad at myself, but like my wife was going like, well, just bring it down to the dry cleaner. And I'm like, I'm not being the guy who lets out his suit. I'm not fucking doing that. I'm not going to be that fucking guy. Because once you do that, dude, the suit, that's why I feel bad for women and understand the way Hillary dresses. The suit is just like, it's the shit. Like if you're putting on weight, you got an undershirt, you got a fucking button-up shirt, and then you got the jacket and the tie. Like the amount of pounds you can hide underneath.
Sometimes
that
a vest.
And a vest. A vest kind of gives it away, though. I think if you got the vest, what it is the tie, you don't see the ruffle of the shirt. You know, that kind of hangs down straight no matter what.
Right.
And it kind of gives you the illusion, especially like a white shirt, gives you the illusion that that's a straight drop off
right.
from your Adam's apple when it isn't. It's just going out to sea.
Yeah.
And I remember when I used to work in a warehouse, every year they had the company picnic. And I remember when the suits would show up in their T-shirts, you know, and, you know, shorts or whatever. I was like, oh, my God, where the fuck is that guy hiding all of that? You know, big, giant, you know, love handles and stuff. So that's why I understood Hillary. Like, just walk. She got to the point. It's like, fuck this. I'm not wearing long hair, you know.
Well,
gonna be wash and go, and I'm gonna dress like a real estate agent.
How often? What's your exercise regime?
Oh, dude, I've been bad. Well, right now I kind of been trying to do the elliptical in the
as
morning.
A new dad.
Yeah, but it's way more obvious. I hate to say it, what you eat, because it's literally like you can do an hour on the elliptical and then go inside and eat three cookies, and you just at the very least like even that out.
Right.
It's like you never just did that.
Right.
And it took you an hour to do, which you can probably shove all three in your
minutes.
Mouth at the same time. Yeah. You're an animal. And then wash it down with milk. Then you're fucked. So when I'm being good is, you know, I stop eating at 5 and I just really try to do the salad with the protein thing and then try to force myself to just drink waters for the rest of the night. But, you know, I am a big sports fan. You know, and I do like to drink like alcohol. It's just complete empty calories.
Oh,
and,
there's no health. Like whenever they do the Michelob Ultra carb break, it doesn't matter. Nah. It's the sugar.
Yeah, it's like a diet candy bar. It's
your body's not
going
to metabolize all that sugar at once. Yeah. It's just going to go, I'm going to put this over here in your gut for a while.
Yeah, so I'm still out of shape right now. I know I am. I just feel like this. You know, whenever I can just grab a nice handful, like, get over here, you. That's when I'm like, all right, I need to do something. So I keep meaning to do something, I am doing something, but then I negate it. Like my parents coming in, obviously I'm going to take them to the great spots.
Right.
And I lie to myself that I'm going to get a salad. You know, I hung in there for a couple meals and I was just like, all right, fuck it. It starts again on Monday. And then tonight's game 7. And it's just like, this is a tough time of year. But like I got my fight and weight. My birthday's coming up. So I'm going to try to get down to where I need to be.
What's game 7? It's basketball, right?
Yeah, basketball is it's the Celtics versus the Wizards, which
okay.
would be, it's not really Batman versus Superman. It's more like
thank you.
If like I don't know if Wolverine's too popular now. He had a couple hit albums, like a couple X-Men that nobody gives a fuck about.
Well,
like right below the main X-Men. Like if they had a fight, because LeBron in Golden State, that's like those are the big superheroes.
Gotcha. Like Colossus. Colossus appeared a little bit in the X-Men movies, but not much.
Right. And considering I have no idea who that is, then
and
yes.
What's so funny is how stereotypical.
Is Halle Berry still in those movies?
No. What's so funny is how stereotypical this is, because you're like, wait, what's a Logan? And I'm like, who are the Wizards? Like it's just like the idea. But it literally.
They used to be the Bullets. And it meant like speaking of superheroes, I think it was like faster than it's.
Right.
Speeding train, stronger than a Silent E. What the hell the fuck did it go?
Stronger than a Silent E was you're talking about
Speeding
Letterman.
Speeding Bolt. Because they ripped that off, so I always fuck it up.
Superman.
Able to leap capital T in a single bound.
It's Letterman. Letterman.
It's a word. It's a plan. Letterman. It's Letterman.
I love that you remember Letterman.
I love that. Yeah.
That
turning the something back into a something. When somebody that would be a word and they take a letter away.
Yep.
You know? Turning the something, I can't think of an example, into something. And then he comes in and he would take the letter off his shirt. It was actually kind of brilliant.
It was brilliant.
Yeah. He was a nerdy athlete.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're going to be watching a lot of that stuff in the coming years again, so you can dust it off.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But I mean, to a certain point. But I also, my mother was like, she took us to 2 kid movies and was just like, I'm not doing this. These movies are stupid. It's stupid. She took us to For Love of Benji, which is a movie about a dog. And then she took us to Herbie Goes to Monte Carlo, which was about a love bug, mm-hmm. you know, the Disney franchise.
Yep.
And it was somehow beating Formula One cars. And,
because he had a lot of heart.
He had a lot of heart.
He was a sentient vehicle.
That's right.
That could open his hood and communicate with his wipers and his lights.
And they had 2 drivers, which is more weight, which everybody knows in racing, you want to take out all the extra weight. And for some reason, they had 2 drivers. Everybody else had fucking 1. So after that, she was just like, to hell with it. Then we just went to we went to some vampire movie like during the disco era, and they tried to combine like disco and the vampire thing. And I remember in the end, he he finally bites the woman. She agrees to become a vampire, and she flies away as a bat.
Yep.
And he's like, "I appreciate you doing this." And she's like, "Ah, you know, I could never get my shit together before."
That was George Hamilton and Susan St. James
in
that movie was Love at First Bite.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Richard Benjamin.
Wow, I could never remember that, dude.
Richard Benjamin was in that too.
And then I remember the they took us to see all the war movies, and then we saw like Taps and all these great movies, and then. Me and my older brother convinced my mother to take us to Scarface when it came out. And I was about 14 or 15, and my youngest brother was like 9. All right,
well, at least, okay.
He
yeah,
was that's... My youngest brother was like 9. And I remember after the chainsaw scene, which was right up front, if my mother said we're getting out of here, I would have been fine because I'd never seen anything like that.
And you stuck it out?
Yeah, we did. And I remember I talked to my mother about it years later. She goes, "Yeah, I was definitely thinking this might be a little too adult for your younger brother. But, you know, at the end, I thought it was a good movie. It was a good-
It was well acted.
Yeah, my mother
it
liked
turned
it.
Out fine.
Do you know where that Scarface house is?
No.
It's in Santa Barbara.
Really?
I didn't realize that. And it recently went up for sale. And I always look up stuff on Scarface, so that came into my little big brother thing on the side, and I clicked on it. Yeah, it went for like crazy money, but I always thought that was somewhere in like Miami.
What do you think the cultural fascination is with Scarface? What is the cultural? Because it, I feel like every college kid, you know, has like a maybe not so much now, but at least when I went to college, which is still very long after Scarface, you know, like so many people had a Scarface poster. And right. There was the Tony Montana, and you know, like what is the culture?
I remember Patrice O'Neill, rest his soul. He did a he did this hilarious thing one time on Opie and Anthony, talking about how like Fight Club was like white guys like Scarface or something. Like I feel like Scarface, like. The little amount of rap that I listen to, like that is like that's their Star Wars. It
right.
seems like they relate, to, and I think it's just because it's a guy who had nothing. He did what he had to do.
Survive.
Yeah. He didn't take any shit.
Right.
And then he had like you know, and then allegedly, I remember him one of those guys saying how like you know, there's the blueprint on how to get out of there and all that. I mean, I'm just a white kid from the cul-de-sac areas of suburbs, so I don't know. I liked it because it was a violent ass movie.
It's a great. It really is.
That's
a great
what
movie.
I liked, and I liked the cars. And, you know, I like when he was getting the Porsche and he was saying this bulletproof, that bulletproof, all that. I like the first car he had that, what's her face, Michelle Pfeiffer made fun of that had the leopard upholstery on it. He had a Cadillac. I mean, I like old cars and shit. So,
did you ever hear Mulaney's bit about that movie?
Uh-uh. Dude, that guy's a fucking genius, man.
He is a mad genius. If you listen to
him and Nick Kroll, I didn't get to see that Oh Hello. I wanted to see that so bad.
Mulaney does not waste any words. If you listen to his stand-up, he says things in the most economical way possible. There are never pauses. There are never like, you know, like he does.
And I still don't think that that guy's getting the credit he deserves.
I think
I'm not talking about success where right. I'm just saying credit. And then the fact that he's behind the scene on SNL and he wrote all those amazing characters.
He just has such a great – he's kind of shitting on Scarface and he goes, "Scarface's house looks like if the Golden Girls won the lottery." He just has such a great way of turning – because most times – you know, like you watch Stan and you go, okay, I see how they got from A to B. You can see the math formula. But with Mulaney, you're like, wow, where did that come from? How did he get to there from here?
He's someone I always, if I get a chance, I don't get to work with him as much as I'd like to, but I always watch him. And I actually worked with him. I always tell this story when his name comes up. I worked with him in Zany's in Chicago when he was, you know, he hadn't even moved to New York yet. I still think he was a Chicago guy. And like, I was barely listening to him. He like had gone up and within three jokes, I just got, you know, pulled to listen. And I never saw like a guy just so right out of the gate, already ready to be on TV.
Yeah.
Like his writing, his performance, his poise, the whole thing. It was just like, oh, this guy's going to host a talk show. This guy's going to like, this is it. This guy is like so beyond ready. Like the worst manager in the world could have looked at him and be like, I don't know. I think this kid has something. It was a complete, complete no-brainer. I was like, this guy, there's no fucking way this guy isn't gonna get something.
Yeah. I mean, even it's just I even just look at his posture. He's just got perfect posture, and his just the way he holds the mic. He's so seamlessly confident on stage, and and the way that he talks is so
eloquent.
He's eloquent, and it's.
And while he's ripping the shit out of stuff.
But it's slow. It, like, he takes his time. It breathes in a way that you get so drawn in.
Yep.
You know? And that's real confidence. I feel like sometimes when I'm like, oh, I can't give him a moment. I just got to go, 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 go. And you realize, like, yeah, that's one way to do it. But I feel like, you know, more confident comedians.
Once people know who you are, you can definitely take a moment. But then you got to be careful you don't abuse that. But like it's real confidence to be able to take a moment when they don't even know who the fuck you are yet.
Right.
Because you're just in that like me, yes. Still like me.
Do you ever go perform in rooms? Do you ever just drop into rooms where people may not know you and just try stuff?
I drop into comedy clubs all the time. So like if I always look at it like if my name wasn't on the thing that night, then, you know, it's a pretty good chance that most people there don't know who I am. But recently I popped in and actually Earthquake was headlining. And it was fun because nobody knew who I was. And it had been a while since I had a feeling. Because most times now, you know, with my daughter, it's just like I'm going out to do my shows on the road. So people are coming out to see me and that. So that was a lot of fun. And it was probably the most fun set I had this year. Going up there and having to get them and then kind of losing them and getting them back. It was like the old days. Like I always felt like I was a better comic, you know, before I started putting stuff on television or whatever, you know, because when people didn't know you, you had to go up and get them. I remember that. And it was never like, okay, I got them. Now I know how to get them. You know, it wasn't. It was just like, now I'm going to do my other spot. And the whole fucking anxiety started over again. Like, going, okay, how am I going to get these? I never forget that. Like all those times in New York going up, and just one impossible situation after another, super late at night, and just watching people failing or succeeding in front of me and trying to learn from as much as I could from all of it to apply it to my mindset when I went up there just so I could get them to fucking give me a chance to get to that first laugh so maybe I could get on a run. And I hadn't felt that for a while until I went up on that. And, you know, I got some couple of jokes. I got this joke on white privilege, and it was fun to do it in front of that crowd to see, you know, if there were laughs, to make sure I'm saying it right. And I don't know, that was, I wish I could do that. I said to myself I was going to do that more. I gotta drop in on shows like that more often. I'm just kind of out of the loop as far as what they have. Remember they used to have Fat Tuesdays and they had Chocolate Sundays.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mo Better Mondays.
Yeah.
And I used to go up on those all the time. And then just as I got busy with the F is a Family, which comes out May 30th.
May 30th, F is a Family, second season on Netflix.
Yeah, it became more of going out and just keeping my act, like, you know, ready to go so it doesn't atrophy, you know what I mean? So then when I would go out on the weekends when people paid to see me, that I wouldn't be rusty. Because I've seen people do that shit. Oh, you know, I work out shit when I'm on the road. I work it out when I'm on the road. And I'm just kind of like, well, people paid to see you. They're not paying to watch you work shit out.
Right.
You know, so go to the gym during the week.
Right.
And then show off the guns on the weekend. That's how I learned how to do it. That was a coming up in the Boston scene. That was kind of ingrained. You try out your new shit during the week, but on the weekend you come in here and you do your good stuff. You know, you do your A-level of material because you know, there was too many funny guys up there that if you didn't, then you wouldn't get the gigs.
Do you trust, like, you know, now when people come to see you on purpose and you fill a big theater with thousands of people, do you do stuff and then you go, I don't know if this was that funny. I wonder if this crowd just, you know, because they're your crowd. You're performing
crowd. A few times if I laugh and people are laughing at the sound of my laugh because they listen to the podcast, like, I always say, okay, all right, though, they're just – they'll laugh because they know me. I know that that isn't. But I know when the thing is ready, when it's really like, you know, what? It's a different sound laugh when they're laughing rather than being like, oh, this is the guy I saw in the thing and now I'm looking at him and I'm excited.
So a recognition laugh versus a gut bust.
Yeah,
laugh.
Like a serious, like there's like two or three bits I got going right now. In my act that, like, I did one and I made another comedian kind of double over when I did it. And I was like, all right, If I get a comedian doing that, then I'm obviously I'm either on a good road or I'm going to have to apologize.
You almost can't trust it when a comedian laughs too hard. You're like, did I just say something really offensive? Because
I know, because comic, we all laugh. We laugh. I always feel like comedians laugh in between the laughs.
Right.
That's the shit that they find funny, where the other stuff is just too pedestrian. Like, yeah, set a punch. I get it. But they'll laugh at other stuff if there's something extra mean in it, or there's an element of failure to the joke. They'll laugh, you know. It's that type of stuff.
Yeah, that's completely true. Or if it's something that is, you know, what the audience is completely taken aback by, the other comics will laugh.
Oh, that's my favorite. That's one of my favorite things. I just love when a comic goes up and just has this belief, like, right? Am I right, people? And everybody's just like, no, not at all. You couldn't be more wrong. And just watching them feel that, because I know what that is. That is like, it's a concussive hit to your chest when that starts happening. Like, I don't like watching people bombing out of control. Like, but watching a friend of mine going up and bomb, that's the one thing I do miss about, you know, back in the days where, you know, when we were coming up. I mean, we used to, I mean, we were so, like, the group of guys I came up with, we were just so, just bad to each other. It was just bad. We were just detrimental. When I really look back, we always go, oh, we're helping each other out because we're toughening each other up. And it was just sort of really mean. And it was the funniest guys I've ever met in this business. And we didn't write one fucking joke together, no sketch, no script, nothing. We basically hung hardcore 8 years and just sat and just trashed each other nonstop.
Yeah, those jokes where, and the more you do it, I feel like the less it happens, but every once in a while where you just take a swing so hard that the bat like wraps around and hits the other side of your face, and the audience will collectively say, listen, this happened very fast, but we all got together and we are 100% unanimously not on board with that. We are unanimously not on board with what
you're doing. Yeah, but you can always just save it looking at
you
him.
Save it,
you just go, no? What are you guys all in the industry that I'm making fun of? You know, you can get out of it.
I'm the only guy who dips my balls in a drawer full of steak. And like, you're the only guy. Okay, well, I will celebrate my differences.
Yes, I was raised to tolerate different people.
Yeah, I think it's and the LA comedy scene is actually, you know, in the country, the LA comedy scene is not the best. But lately, it's gotten good. It's gotten real good.
It has gotten 10 times better since I moved out here. That just sounded really arrogant. That's not what I meant. When I came out here, because I moved away from here in like 99, and I went back to New York, and New York just felt like home. And then I was there for about 5-6 years, and I just felt like it was time to move on. And I was coming out to LA, and I was liking it, and I was fighting that feeling because I had such a bad experience the first time I came out here. Where I just wanted to get on stage and grow as a comic, and this is not the fucking place to do that.
Mm-mm.
And I started coming out, you know, I had a few things on TV, and all of a sudden, like, a few doors started opening up, like, hey, why don't you come down to the improv and do a set? And I'm like, I played it cool, like, yeah, cool. And I was just like, well, you let me on that fucking stage. So when I moved out here again, I remember standing in the back of the Comedy Store in the late 2000s, mid to late 2000s, 2007. And I remember watching some acts that were going up, and like this fucking depression literally washed over me. And I was thinking like, oh my God, what did I do? I moved back out here to this. And it's not that the comics were less funny. It's just, it's the gym thing. They get less reps. So people were just tighter and more comedically fit in New York. Like the average guy that was okay was so much better than the LA guy.
Because they're going up 3-4 times a night.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But it's very hard to do here.
Yes. If you can do that in a week, you're like, dude, I'm fucking killing it. So they were, comics in New York were running them out of the gym, basically, as they say. And but it just took me a minute to kind of see, you know, through the forest and just kind of see like, oh, that guy's good. So then I knew when to pop in, when to listen, and when not to listen. Because there's always going to be the new guys that are figuring out how to do that. And I was a new guy. But I feel like you know, guys like, you know, Joe Rogan and, you know, Gerard Carmichael coming along, you know, when he came along, Al Madrigal. And there was all these guys that were just like true Sebastian, and they were just really like guys that loved comedy. And I'm missing, of course, so many other people. Then I'm like a total geek fan of so many people, but they keep booking TV work. And I'm such a fan of their stand-up, like, it fucking annoys me.
Because you just want to see them perform.
Yeah, like, stop being successful there. It's right. Like, you do this, and then you fucking...
Get back in the club where I need you.
Yeah, and I don't want to see you do stand-up. Like, Fortune Feimster is like, it's like just... Every time I see, like, she just has this stage presence, how fucking funny she is.
Yeah.
The first time I saw her, that, like, you know, and then I would always see her. She was working on, was it Chelsea Lately? Mm-hmm. And then I saw her on a pile or something. She keeps booking acting work. And I'm like, this is why I never see her down at the fucking club. She's too goddamn talented.
Don't let your success ruin your stand-up.
I know.
Get back there.
No, but I'm always just like, look, if somebody's like a decent comic and then they get something on TV, I'm like, hey, good for them. Good for them, you know?
Right.
That's great. Continue on. But if somebody, I see somebody, I'm like, this person could be great. This person's on their way to being like I want to watch this person do hours.
But then
hour
you
specials,
just get,
and they keep booking shit. You're like, fuck.
That's taking you away from.
Yeah, this is just my own. I'm not telling her what to do with the career. This is just me as a nerd.
But the Comedy Store is and the Improv are both amazing right now.
Chris D'Elia is another guy that came along. Just a legit, legit headliner. Like, just like a legit, like, oh man, I gotta do a little math before I go on after this guy, because this guy is blowing the fucking roof off the place. You know, they have a lot of guys. And then, oh, I'm forgetting everybody. Mark Maron, watching him, you know, with, you know, his What the Fuck podcast.
Yeah.
And then he got the following, and then people got what he was trying to do. Although I do miss Mark going up as an unknown comic and watching people dealing with him. He was like, there's so many guys that were like, that was another thing, you know, bringing up Patrice again. I remember I used to try towards... You know, the end, hanging out, like, when I was in New York before I moved out here, I really tried to enjoy watching him interact with people that didn't know him. Like, it wasn't even the show. It was afterwards when he was walking around New York. And I used to, like, it was be so funny, but there would always be, like, this wave of, like, ah, fuck. I mean, there's no way this guy's not going to be super famous. And someday people are going to expect this. And I'm never going to get to see somebody, like... meeting him for the first time, not knowing who he is, and just having their head spun around. It's one of my favorite things that I've gotten to see in while doing stand-up. But I don't know, kind of all over the place. But since then, when I first came out, is like, you know, Rogan's down at the store all the time, and Maron's down there. All these guys are down there. And then all these new, you know, kids, I call them kids, are coming up, and they're getting to watch all these guys that I like. And it's just, I don't know, it's like kind of like another... I mean, it's a fucking zoo down there now. It's like literally like a scene.
It's hard not to get... I mean, like, everyone... You know, listen, maybe this is a... Maybe this is kind of a goofy thing to say, but I swear, every time I step on that main stage, it's hard not to feel the history of feet that have paced around that stage and just sort of feel like, oh, this is where, you know... This is where Pryor would get ready for specials, and this is where Eddie, you know. So it is. I kind of every time I go in there, I almost kind of feel like I'm meeting a famous person. Like, oh my,
yeah. Well, you got to keep going down. You got to get past that, because then that'll affect. It'll like affect your show. But when I first started going out there, it was the late '90s, and it was a bad period, where it was just like. You know, just comedy. Just I've gone through. I started on a dip. You know, I started in 92, so the 80s was
that really was the fallout of that. Yeah.
Yep. And then it started to come back up again in the mid-90s, and then it dipped again in the late 90s. And then after 9/11, it just has continued to ascend. And then with, like, social media and the music industry imploding and movies and TVs imploding and everything's fucking free, somehow we sort of floated up. And but in the late 90s was sort of the era of – you know, the person with the TV show coming in and just burning the light for like an hour and a half and having not really anything to talk about. And it became like this. And then all these comics I felt were watching it going like, I can't wait till I get a TV show so then I can go up there and fucking
burn the light.
Yeah, and waste everybody's time. And there was like certain guys that just walked in and you just, you know, if you were going on like fucking 3 hours later, you're just like, all right, man, I'm going home.
But do you think the idea, because... people, audiences, consumers are so voracious for content now. The idea of like, you know, is a special still special? You know, because I used to watch the same specials over and over again, but I feel like people just watch something once. Like, okay, what's next? What's
too
next?
Many. There's too many. There's too many. And a special used to be someone who was selling out clubs, who was a seasoned headliner, showcasing why you were selling out clubs. And now feature acts want to get hour-long specials so they can sell out clubs. So now it's really like their special is basically what you would send to a club to try to get, like when we used to send out our VHS tape. Yeah. I mean, it's not quite that bad. I mean, it's an amazing time where people are so prolific. But, you know, I know a lot of guys saying like, oh, I watch so-and-so special, or this person's special, and we have like overlapping stuff and all that. And it's like, yeah, because people are getting specials too quick. There's too many of them, and you don't have time to find your voice. So even if you go onto somebody else's topic, you're going to be taking it from a skill set where there's going to be like overlap. Because even that happened to me early on in my I did another story I've told a zillion times. The first one I ever did, I did a half hour for Comedy Central, and I was green to get a half hour. I mean, I was like, let's see, I did that in like 03, so I was 11 years in, and that was considered to get a half hour special 11 years in. That didn't happen when I started.
Right.
They used to have like the A-list. The A-list was a A-list comedian doing half his act.
I remember that.
Yeah. So then by the time I came along, the bar was dropped down lower because Comedy Central was fucking giving them out like, you know, candied cigarettes, right? And these half-hour specials. So I was one of the guys. They're like, all right, we're running out of guys. Let's give it to the fucking redhead weirdo. So I did one. And I remember like a year earlier that show MTV Cribs had come out.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a bit about MTV Cribs. And Greg Giraldo, rest his soul, he had a bit. And ours was so similar, it was fucking eerie. And like, I remember, I think I did it. And Greg got off stage with the cell. And Greg's like, dude, he goes, I'm not fucking with you. I swear to God, you know you can trust me, but I have the exact same bit. And I go, yeah, Greg, obviously, I know you're not, you know, I know who you are. I know you wouldn't do that or whatever. So, and we had both, I don't know, we both needed material at the time. So we made this sort of agreement that we would both just do the bit on the road. Because it was a generic like, oh, yeah, I'm watching Britney Spears in a fucking helicopter as I'm sitting on a fucking air mat. I mean, it's the most obvious, you know, angle that you would take on that. Because right. We were young guys when we did it. So I go to do my special and I forget that conversation.
Oh, no.
And I do the bit.
Oh, no.
And then he ended up getting a special like a year later. He also forgot the conversation. And he did the bit. But the funny thing was he did it after me. So everyone, you know, I started getting emails back then when I was on AOL.com. This is how right. long ago I was going, guys, so Greg, just to let you know, there's this guy, Greg Giraldo, stealing your shit. And then I called him up. I was like, dude, did you do the fucking Britney Spears bit? He goes, and he said, oh, fuck, yeah, why? I go, I already did it on my other one. And I think he was laughing because everyone was thinking that he was stealing from me. And it was one of those things. But now that is – back then that was like I'm not shitting on these young guys today, women that are getting these specials, because I was that guy. Except back then, when I started, guys at that level got nothing. And then by the time I got to that level, you got a half hour. And now you get an hour.
Right.
And then you combine the fact that back then, even then – when I got it, you had to wait for them to tap you on the head with their magic wand going, okay, little boy, you can go live your dream now for half an hour. Now, comics get to decide. Oh, I'm ready. This is a special. This is worthy of being a special. So I'm a little concerned where, like, you know, as a fan of comedy, like, if, like, Chappelle or Chris Rock puts one out or Louis, like, I want a month to take that in. You know, see it, think about it, be affected by it. But now, like with that, there's a new one coming out every week. It's just like, it becomes like that thing with like Lost. Remember Lost?
Yeah.
Where it was just like everybody be like, you know, oh, you got to watch the show. You got to get caught up, or like, you know, you got to start watching The Wire. You got to watch this. And you'd be like 60 fucking episodes behind. And even though you knew it was going to be a great show, it was just so like, fuck.
Too much pressure.
Yes. And I feel like... I'm a little apprehensive. I mean, maybe this. I'm just the old guy going, when I was a kid,
yeah,
you had to wait till HBO said you were ready. But like, there is going to be an element of you know, there are only so many hours that are ready to go.
Right.
You know what I mean? And like, I don't know where it goes. I have no idea. But one other thing I just say to myself, though, that keeps me calm is because I literally start going like, Jesus Christ, am I like in hair metal right now? Is that what's going on? With how accessible this has become? But then what I think is people always want to laugh. That's the thing. So as long as you keep going to the clubs, you stay contemporary. The thing is if you stop going to the clubs and you stop being around the young guys coming up, you know, because you don't even understand that your influence, like everything just influences it. And then you kind of change with the times. It's when you stay out of the clubs and you're just performing to your crowd and they're getting older and older and your show's getting earlier and earlier.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you're doing the 3 p.m. show and then you walk into the Comedy Store being like, I sell out 3 p.m. shows around the country. You're going to go in there and you're going to get your fucking ass kicked. And you're going to be literally, it's going to be like you're going up there playing disco when everybody's listening to these fucking DJs. I mean, I can't even tell you how many times I've seen that. And I walk out of the club when it happens because it's like a fucking bucket of water to the comedians.
What you just described terrifies me.
Yeah, and then watching somebody have to try and make it again. That trying to make it again is harder than making it.
Yeah.
Once you fucking lose them and then you're coming back again and you're this old fuck. And everybody who's your age, they're too fucking old to go out now. The kids are in college. They don't have money to go see you. And now you're going to come around like this old creep and start doing colleges again to try to get that going is.
A few people can do it. Brian Regan can just tour for the rest of
his
life.
You can count them on one hand.
But it is.
I saw Lewis Black do it.
Yeah.
But you're talking like the best of the best. But like, I would not want to face that challenge.
Some of them just go to Vegas. It's like some of them just kind of go, you know what? Fuck it. I'm just going to go be in one place.
Yeah.
I'll just go to Vegas. You know, like that's the right crowd.
Yeah.
And then just do that. But that what you're saying.
Then you have to invest that money wisely because there's this thing where like then you it's this weird thing where you then you're famous in Vegas and you're not you go. You're not famous anywhere else. So gamblers around the world, around the United States know who you are.
Yeah.
But then God forbid you go to Portland or Seattle to do a gig. And, you know, those same 20 people that showed up to your Vegas show from Portland will show up to that show and you're staring at an empty house.
I saw you perform. We were eating shrimp cocktail.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Here we go.
Yep. So,
but it is scary to.
I'd do a run there, but I wouldn't. I would never do
not like a 2 year long residency.
No, I would go out of my fucking mind.
Yeah, I don't think I could. I could barely handle it for a week. I think I would go.
No, I would go out of my fucking mind working any club for a year straight. Like what I like about this job is I have ADD massively. So like I always hated when I had a day job and I got to the point where I'd been there for a year and I could be like, you know what? 1 year ago today, I was standing right fucking here and I just would always feel like a loser. So I love that every week, even though it's the same act and I'm working on it, I love that the background changes.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like a high end cartoon, right?
Yeah. Well, so it's
rather than the same background keep going by that becomes to me, it becomes like mundane. There's nothing new to see. Then I'm not thinking new thoughts. And then my act literally just, I go into a stall and it's nosedive after that.
So are you continuing? Are you taking any time off with the birth of the baby or are you?
Yeah, no, I did that. But I also made sure I did enough. And what I did was I came out of the gate doing clubs on like Mondays and Tuesdays or whatever, mm-hmm. and letting people know that, you know, all right, I'm going to have a fucking napkin with some subjects. And what it is, what always the new hour is, it's just momentum. And I get on stage and like, and I'm able to go for 12 minutes and then I hang on for dear life until the hour's up. And then the next time maybe it's 13. And then, you know, so lately I was stuck in the 20s. And it has in the next month, it went up to like the 40s or whatever. I mean, I was still fooling them or whatever, but like now I got it down where I'm loving my act and I'm loving like the direction that it's going in. And I don't have a bunch of baby material because it's just been awesome. And, you know, I'm excited that I am a dad. So I don't have like a bunch of stuff going, you know, kids do the darndest things. Like, I don't
They'll
have
poop any. On you. They don't care. They'll poop on your face.
And
They'll...
then the phone rings and I'm like, hey.
Yeah, you get up a lot. Boy, they sure don't care who they are.
What's on the phone? Oh, that's baby shit. Because it was on my hand. Come on, people. But you love them. Don't you? How long you guys? Hey, God bless him. God bless him. It's 36 years. I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you do it.
I swear to God, I kind of want to see you do a set of the guy that you hate. I want to see you do a set of like the comic that you can't stand, because I'll bet.
Oh, that'd be a fun night. That'd be a fun night of comedy.
I would bet you.
Until actually, somebody does something that you actually do in your act going, oh my God, I'm that guy.
Fuck. But I actually do think you would, you know. Because I think you sort of build up these ideas in your head of like, well, there are certain territories I'm just not going to go in because I know that's not who it. But as an experiment, it might be kind of fun, because maybe you'll discover that because of, you know.
No, you know what it is? I respect the fact that I decided to be in this business.
Yeah.
I respect that I was dumb enough to do this. And I don't like to talk about Ephesus Family, which is what I'm supposed to be doing here, is, you know, I made sure, as much as this is based on my life, it's based on a bunch, like Mike Price's life and Dave Richardson, all the people that we have in the writer's room, like everybody contributes. So then what it becomes is unless you were in my family, you'd actually be able to pick out, okay, that right there, that's based on truth. Oh, my dad used to say that, or my brother did that. But like, I wanted to do the show where my family or anybody, you know, that the stories might be about could sit down and watch them and not be like humiliated. Like, I don't want to like humiliate people. And I just have like, you know, this feeling of when my daughter goes through her teen years and she's just like, Dad, you're like so not funny, blah, blah, that if I was on stage talking about her, I just wouldn't want to see what that would do to our relationship. I just want like sometimes I see comics when some of the shit they say about their kids, it's like, dude, you realize that this lasts forever on the internet.
They're going to see this.
Their classmates are going to see this.
Right.
And you're exaggerating something that they did, and then they're going to get a fucking nickname out of this. And being a kid is hard.
Yes.
You know, so I don't want to do that to them. So if I'm ever, I always talk about her in a roundabout way and keep the jokes on me. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to be like, you know, like, ah, my kids are, you know, blah, 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 blah. I won't even say it, you know, just so somebody doesn't cut it up. And
it's very sweet to see you holding a baby. It's very sweet. You got
it. Oh, I love it. It's the greatest thing. I had the greatest possible moment of my life just last night with her, where she was in a great mood. She had taken a nap, you know, and she was laying on her back. She's at that age, you know, with like babies when they lift their legs up and they put their feet together. Mm-hmm. They're like all still flexible, you know what I mean, from
yeah.
being in the womb for so long. And she was just talking gibberish. And I was just putting my nose to her nose, imitating her. And she loved it and was laughing and all that. And I did that for like 10 minutes. It was like the greatest thing ever. And then my wife told me later, she goes, you know, that's actually really good for him. Like, you're supposed to talk to them regularly and then also imitate the sounds they're making so they know to keep repeating the sounds or whatever. I just thought I was having fun, but it was like just when they look up at you, like how bad they want to like connect with you and interact with you. And when you're interacting with them, like, I mean, they haven't seen Star Wars yet. Mm-mm. They haven't seen Scarface. So they're looking at you like this is.
But we're going to take them to see a double feature.
This is the most amazing show I'm ever going to see. And just to have that. That experience, like my daughter made my wife cry yesterday just by walking in those like a sheet, like the comforter was up too high and she wanted to see her. So she's just starting to be able to push up. She pushed way up and had like the biggest smile ever. And it just melted. All of a sudden it's like crying and stuff. It's on Mother's Day, man. It was awesome.
Aw, that's
yeah.
sweet.
It's awesome. So I don't see the comedy in any of that.
Right.
Like when I'm going to go on, like, why would I ruin that? Being like, hey, now I got two broads in the house telling me where to fucking bed it, you know? Like, is it worth it to do that?
That guy you're doing,
to get
I
that
hate
stupid.
So
oh, you know, a comic I can't stand now? The latest one is the Cause comic. The comedy with the Cause.
Oh, right.
Yeah, let's stop bullying, or let's talk about this issue or that fucking issue. Because after what, and I don't mind if you do that, but you got to keep the jokes coming.
Right.
That you know what?
Don't sacrifice the jokes in service of a message.
Don't just say something and then get a fucking applause break.
And then go,
like
did
we're
it.
On Oprah.
Right.
Then that's when I just like literally my teeth start grinding together.
Do it with jokes. Just do it with jokes.
I stand out in the parking lot when an act like that is on. You know, someone who's gonna, you know, that and the white guy telling it like it is. That's the other one that I have to leave.
Oh, you guys just can't handle the
truth,
huh?
You can't handle it, man. You know, you're too politically
correct.
Didn't
realize
yeah.
it.
Here comes a big bucket of reality.
I'm about to douse those wings in truth sauce over here. Just want to drop on those. Oh, I guess I didn't realize it was the blank fan club. No. It's just fans
dangerous.
Of comedy. It's just fans of comedy. Yeah, it's the person who is the person who has already assumed that they're just too much for the audience and not realizing it's like, no, you're just annoying. Yeah. There's
it's
no
the
jokes
male
and you're
version
just annoying.
Of like, you know, when you meet the psycho chick and she's just like, guys are intimidated by me. They can't handle me. It's like, yeah, you're a fucking psycho. You ever think of that? You're a fucking psycho. Like, they should date those types of comics.
They probably do.
Nah, but then they would fucking have a kid, and then what would that be?
It could be the most well-adjusted child from having two completely insane parents. That's possible.
Negative is making a positive?
It's pie. I mean, that mathematically doesn't hold up, but it could happen. It could happen. But it just makes me – talking to you just makes me feel like – you know, my schedule is so crazy. I don't get to spend as much time because, you know, I'm married. So when
I'm done
with work, I want to go see my wife. But every day I go, I should be at the fucking club and I should be working on jokes. And I don't have the energy.
Oh, yeah. You're fine, dude. What you're doing, you're fine, dude. You're a fucking, you're your own enterprise.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I like being on stage. I like fucking telling jokes. I love it. I love it.
Well, there you go. Then you'll be fine.
But you know, I love what you're saying about your baby because so much comedy comes out of discomfort. And if there's nothing uncomfortable about something, then you know.
No, and I want to keep that for me. I don't want to just be like strip mining every aspect of my life, you know
right.
what I mean? Like I haven't said her name or whatever, you know. That's my life.
Because you don't want
to. Can I give a shout out to some of the people that all the talented people on the show at this point?
Let's do a shout out to F is for Family.
F is for Family. Is a show that I do with Vince Vaughn's company, Wild West, and we put the show together with the great Mike Price, co-creator of the show, Simpsons legend,
mm-hmm.
and Peter Billingsley, Mike Lagnese, and then all the great voice actors. We got Laura Dern, who plays my wife. Justin Long plays Kevin. Sam Rockwell plays the next-door neighbor, Vic. David Koechner, Mo Collins, Haley Reinhardt, Debbie Derryberry, Trevor Duvall, Michael Kevin Richardson, and we act... Kevin Michael Richardson, sorry. Dyslexia here. Michael K. Williams... is from The Wire. Speaking of The Wire, plays
what
a character.
Fucking insane cast.
Yes.
What an incredible group of people.
Oh yeah. Well, that's what you do. You surround yourself. I saw Seinfeld say that one time about his series. I just surrounded myself with the most talented people I could, you know, that I would want to hang out with, and that's what we've done. You know, I was in on pretty much all of the auditions that people had. Of course, you know, the bigger people didn't have to audition, but I was, you know, a huge fan. Of all of them, and just watching them being in the booth, like, and just watching like everybody's different processes. They were trying to figure out the voice that they were going to do. Has just been the great. Like, I'm still one of my most favorite things was watching Dave Koechner being Bob Pogo, and I can't even remember the line he was doing, but he was literally leaned back away from the mic. It looks like he was doing the backstroke. He was just swinging both of his arms, delivering this line as he was pretending like eat a pizza or something, and. Justin Long, when he does Kevin, if I'm in the booth, I can't look at him if he's being mad because he gets like this, this fucking look of determination, yet he's completely like, you know, there's that vacancy because Kevin's a little, you know, not the brightest bulb sometimes. Yet he is, and he is a sweet kid, but like Justin sort of captures all of that. And there's a face he makes when he's done talking, when he's mad at his dad, who I play, Frank, that if I'm looking at him, I'm going to ruin the take. So, but yeah. I don't know. I've had such a great time with everybody on it. So it's the second season. It's 10 episodes. Last year we only had 6 because I think it was weird. It's how fast this business moves. Like 4 years ago, for a comedian to come in to Netflix and want to do a cartoon was weird. They were like, "What? Why would you want to do that? Like, you don't want to do?" Because I think that they wanted me to do more like what Louis was doing or what
right.
Maron was doing. And I'm looking at those shows going, I can't do it better than those guys.
Right.
Like, those guys are like, you know, like fucking Louis can do everything.
Well, it's always the wrong question, though, where they go, hey, don't you want to do a show like that? No, I want to find the thing that I want to do the way that they found the thing that they want to do. I don't want to copy their thing.
You know that thing that guy Louis fucking absolutely destroying? Do you want to do it like half as good, or maybe like a third as good as him?
Hey, you know, maybe you should do that.
It's like, yeah,
a guy who wants to be a French rodeo clown, like Zach Galifianakis. Yeah. No, because Zach already did that.
We'll put it in Fresno.
Yeah,
and he wants to be a juggler.
Totally different.
Totally different.
It's not the same thing
at all.
We'll get Brad Garrett to play his mom.
That's when you get the voicemail. Hey, Bill, it's Zach. Give me a call. The fuck, bro? So since this has been going on, like, as we were doing it, like, and then I think what really helped our show was as we were doing it, BoJack came out.
Right.
Which I think BoJack, I give them tremendous credit. I love that fucking show. I love his house. BoJack's house is the shit. That fucking Hollywood Hills house with the pool. It's right on the edge. You never seen that?
Yeah, I have.
I don't know. Something about every time I watch the beginning, like when I watch the opening credits of that, it's not a comedy to me. Like I'm looking at it like that's fucking, this guy's the shit. Look at that house. It's got that syndication money or whatever. But anyways, I feel like they kind of like kicked open the door for us and we were able to go in. And fortunately, it was different.
So I have two questions for you as we're wrapping this up. Number one, were you ever concerned that being happy and comfortable would be – do you ever have that weird sort of fear that
– Yeah, that was me in my 20s and early
30s. I'm not going to be a funny comic if I'm happy and comfortable.
If I go to therapy, if I do this, if I do that, if I try to work out all of this shit. That's not what it worked out for me. What it actually was me becoming a happier person was great for the people in my life that I care about, and I was really difficult. I was very difficult to be around. And I'm not saying that I'm not still, but I'm a lot less difficult. So, I mean, you can't – the amount of therapy that you go to, the amount of shit that you talk about, no matter how many fucking rainbows you look at, you still have your pain
right
to draw on. It's just you're now not taking it out on other people.
Sure.
And that's how I look at my 20s and into my 30s was just me – thinking that I was this great guy and I was going around and I was hurting a lot of people. And it was just like, you know, the day when I kind of looked back at it and I was just like, I don't want to be this guy, you know. And believe me, dude, I got a long way to go. And there's a whole line of people that would fucking tell you some stories that I do. But, you know, I am working towards, but I don't buy into that. You know, I've had a few people going like, dude, used to be angry. I liked it when you were angry. It's like, all right, well, go watch some old tapes and find a younger angrier comic, because I'm not going through this, like, I'm not going to be that fucking guy that just, you know, has a fucking aneurysm at 55 out
right.
of stress and all that shit.
Yeah, you don't want to have the aneurysm that people go, well, yeah, I mean, you know, he's
no,
what really
you
high strung.
So
yeah,
fucking,
yeah,
same guy.
Really
same guy.
Couldn't really deal with
anger. Anger rate him up. There you go. I tried to tell him. After
That's what
I,
happens.
After I tried
after
to encourage him.
After the fourth
him.
Ulcer, I said, Bill, yeah. you need to take it down. You yeah. didn't listen. Yeah. He deserves to be dead.
Yeah.
He fucking deserves.
Well, he's the next angry guy, and I'll tell him to keep being fucking angry. So no, it doesn't. And I, you know, I have a fucking amazing life, and I'm enjoying the shit out of it. But I still also, you know, I fuck up a lot, and I still have the temper. What did I do? You know, in the last month, I broke the screen on my laptop by stabbing it with my phone. So it's still there. Just because my daughter smiles and makes my day now doesn't mean that, like, that's the thing. That's the saddest thing about my temper is it's at so many. It's just like if I could just handle those moments.
Right.
It's not like I'm running around yelling at people. I mean, I'll do it in the car. I have a little bit of road rage. Surprise, surprise. But like, it's just like, yeah, so much of it is that shit. Like the way, like I'm a big, I wish shit didn't change guy. Like I miss operators. Okay. I didn't mind when I had to stand in line and check in for my fucking flight. I didn't give a fuck. Cause you know what? Back then, not as many people were flying. It all kind of balanced out. And I, you know, all of this shit, like the reason why I stabbed my phone into my laptop was because I followed all of, you know, Steve Jobs' fucking, you know, agenda here, and I updated the new system, and then it couldn't talk to my fucking laptop, and then I lost all the passwords, and I couldn't get on it, and all this shit, and it was me, and they would treat me like I was some asshole trying to, and I couldn't figure out how to get in, and I thought I had finally got in, and like three times during the day, I had the laptop in my hand, and I was ready to fucking break it over my knee, like that's even possible. But I was ready to throw it, and I kept setting it down, and I wouldn't do it. And then finally, like at 9 o'clock at night, and it was closed. This is how hard I that's how hard I stabbed it. I just took it, and I just fucking. It felt so good. The amount of times I've had my iPhone in my hand and just begun to like put the tension to snap it,
right?
And I've been and the anger, I get halfway down my forearms and I stop because I'm mature enough to know that right after I do it, the satisfaction is going to last for maybe 90 seconds.
And then you're going to have to go get another phone.
Yeah, and then I got to go down and I have to fucking go to the Grove.
It's a cost. You know, everything has a cost. Is it worth paying that cost? But I think losing all your passwords would make most people want to stab their laptop with their phone.
No, I had my password, which I believe I was yelling at my computer.
We've all done it. It's fine. That's not a bad, you know, it's at least it's an inanimate object and not a human being.
I wish
being.
I could just take that soundbite and just play that to my wife. Hey, Chris said it. We've all done it. I mean, I don't know why you think what I'm doing is weird. These things definitely fucking listen to you, though, because I was pitching some TV show the other day and I was with somebody else and I brought up, it was that old guy moment. I brought up the banana splits.
Oh, yeah,
of course. As a reference and like, yep. The guy, like, I'm so old now, the guy running the network had no fucking idea what it was.
You know, with the animal costumes.
Yeah,
and
goes,
this guy
yeah,
was
it Danger
splits.
Island? Yeah, Jan Michael Vincent? Nobody? And then, like, my buddy goes, this is how he sent me a text. He sent me a picture. When I turn this thing back on, I'll show it to you. Like, he got a fucking little sales pitch thing on the side, whatever you fucking kids call it, to buy a banana split t-shirt. Like, how random is that?
That is pretty random.
That's bullshit. Yeah, it's like fucking listening. Because it's not like he typed it in. I explained it. I think I said it's like Beetlejuice. Like I said, banana splits like three times.
And they appear.
And it lights up like, oh, yeah, this guy's really interested.
Fuck.
But for some reason, it didn't show up on my phone.
I can't understand everyone's fascination with like Alexa or any of the home assistant devices. I'm like, they're just listening to everything.
So is your TV.
You say.
That's the first thing you do. If you get a TV with a camera, you got to put tape over that.
Yeah. I do that on my laptop.
I do it on my laptop, too. Yeah, I do all of that shit.
Too.
They're going to see you banging your wife. You're going to watch you jerk off. They're just like, it's like even one of that Jim Carrey movie, the good morning, good night, and good evening, whatever the fuck it was. Morning, good afternoon, and good night. Yeah,
yeah. The self-facing camera for masturbators is terrible because it's just the absolute worst part is just whatever dumb faces you're making in the process.
No, I can't imagine. I can't imagine, like, that's the thing in the future. Like, I just can't imagine the absolute loss of all privacy. And then just the way people, their cavalier attitude towards it of like, well, hey, man, it's not doing anything wrong. Yeah? I don't give a fuck. You want to watch me jerk up? You want to watch me bang my wife? I don't give a shit. Fuck do I care? Like those people, it's just like, and this is the thing about them, is there's just a sea of that for every one person going like, hey, dude, it's probably not a good thing. It's probably not a good thing to have that out there. If you really thought this through with your relatives and all that.
I love that, this guy. You please write that down.
That's it. Do it. What do I like, you know?
I love that guy. You want to watch me bang my dick or shit? I don't care.
Yeah,
so
funny.
Put my asshole right up to the street. Hey, you know me. I don't give a fuck.
That person who like actually is a dope but thinks they're smart, like
right.
That person is just just probably
that's
me.
That's most
but, you know.
Of the internet, by the way. That's most of the internet. There's scientific studies to back up that concept.
All, yeah, the whole fifth. Yeah,
so that's the one thing. You know, every so often I almost text you and go, hey, well, now I know you have a baby, so you probably have no free time. But I always want to say like,
I still have free time.
Hey, you know, I think we live relatively near each other. We should just have lunch. But I always feel like I'm bothering you. I don't want to bother you and have you go like, oh, I don't fucking want to hang out with this guy.
No, dude, gets me out of the house.
All right.
It's fine. My wife would like that.
All right.
Get him out of the house.
I would love to take it. Because when we did Oddball a few years ago, it was really fun.
I'll bring my parents.
Bring your parents. Are these your parents, Bill? These are your parents?
I'll bring two other old, really white-looking people. And you'd be like, oh,
these
my
are your
God.
Parents.
Those are your parents, yes.
The other thing we got from this podcast is that I feel like the internet has to make the Star Wars Scarface face mashup.
They got to do it.
Because it's fit. They both, you know, like they both came from very humble beginnings. I don't know if it's called Scar Wars or Starface, but someone has to make the Luke Skywalker Tony Montana mashup where he basically starts taking over.
Then you could overlap it with Kiss, where Ace Frehley was Star Child. So Starface. So it's Tony Montana in Ace Frehley makeup.
Okay.
All right, with a fucking lightsaber.
I love it.
There you go.
It's done.
That's it.
That's a new Netflix show. Motherfucker. Yeah. Well, fine then, Katie, for showing me that was not a creative idea because the internet.
No, it's all been done.
Everything's been done. There's no more original.
You know what the worst feeling I had with that? I used to watch all these drum videos, right? Instructional drum videos, you know, thinking that I watched a zillion of them and I still suck. But there was just like some really bad ones out there. And I was hanging out with DeRosa, who also plays drums, one time. And I was just going like, dude, you know what I would love to do? I go, but it's so fucking inside. I would love to do a parody of a fucking drum instructional.
Fred Armisen.
Video. Yes. How did you know he did that? Dude, that was the most inside thing. Somebody, and he literally goes, oh, man. He goes, somebody's already doing that. I go, get the fuck out of here. Somebody's already doing that. Who the fuck is doing that? Like Fred Armisen. I go, he's already doing that. He goes, yeah, dude, it came out like 6 weeks ago or something. It was just like, at that point, I was just like, I quit.
Yeah.
I give up. He had everything. He had the awful paisley shirt that they always had in those videos from the early 90s, and all these jazzer guys always had that thing. Then he had the thing, too, where they would just play this completely fucked up odd time thing, and then when they were done, there'd be a pause when the song ended, and then they would all spontaneously start laughing. And then you'd watch it at home, and you'd try to laugh, too, like you understood what musically just happened.
But not.
Dude, he had everything.
Yeah.
He had everything. And it was, of course, you know, ridiculously difficult patterns that you would never put in any sort of a song. Completely useless shit. And he fucking killed it.
Yeah, there are some things where you go, okay, I can see how that would have already been made. But there are other times where you go, it doesn't even enter your mind that someone else would have. And you go, how the fuck? That's not possible.
Yeah, that someone else gives a shit to this level. And like, I mean, I don't know what he made of. Somebody actually bought it for me. There was another. I worked with a comic on the road, and he goes, "Yeah, dude, that's what it was." Because I was so during that time, I was so fucking like. It wasn't even that he did it. It was just like because all my other ideas. Oh, that's already in development. Oh, that's already been done. Fucking Eddie Murphy had something like that 30 years ago. It's just like everything I couldn't come up with anything fucking original. And then I was just like, I was just digging deeper and deeper, and I was like, now this, there's no fucking way. And I was just talking shit. I wasn't going to do it. And the fact that he actually did it, it was actually kind of depressing. I was just like, oh, God, I'm that guy.
You know what, though? Because that one's real personal. Because that's not just, oh, wouldn't it be crazy if we mashed up two things that everyone knows? That's like a very personal, this is part of your life. You play drums. You see these instructional videos.
Dude, if you can find some of those old videos, then the guitar ones are great. It was called Hot Licks. And this is back before Nirvana and all those guys came along and all of a sudden doing a guitar solo was like, you know, kissing your sister or something. All of a sudden you couldn't do that anymore.
I mean, used to be so.
Yeah, it used to be totally normal. You know, rock stars would marry their second cousins. They had all these guys that would just show you how to do all this shit with the whammy bar, making it squeal and all that. But like it got so bad, and like by the end of the 80s, it's like your guitar had to kind of match your outfit. Like you'd have like these like I'm not gonna say the guitarist, but there was a guy who had like this sort of greenish guitar, and then like the pattern that he had on the body of it matched his boots, matched. He had the same thing on his boots. He had it on his belt. He tucked his jeans into his boots so you could see his boots match his guitar, which matched his belt. It was like rock star Herb Tarlick. If you ever watched WKRP, it was something.
But anything that makes you go, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it was just.
Yeah, you got to do that.
Just too much thoughts.
Well, everyone should watch F is for Family May 30th.
Yes. And, 10 episodes as opposed to 6, which I was trying to talk about earlier. I was trying to get to that. I was just saying that's why we only did 6 the first time.
Got it.
And I don't even think they would have given me the show if Vince Vaughn didn't come along to the. With the pitch meeting. So thank you to him and thank you to everybody that I mentioned and anybody that I might have forgot. And really proud of this season. May 30th, On Netflix, and if you haven't watched it yet, you'll have 16 to watch, and I hope you find it as funny as we do.
And Bill also has a podcast.
Yes, called the Monday Morning Podcast, and I also have the Thursday Afternoon Just Before Friday Monday Morning Podcast, where I just check in on you. That one's only a half hour long. And that's it. Other than that, I'm going to be up in Canada, Winnipeg, Saskatoon, and Regina.
Nice.
Over the next, and I'm driving the whole fucking, then once after Winnipeg, I drive the whole thing. Just because I like knowing it exists.
It's a nice drive. I mean, it's like that whole area is just – it's just – it's real nice.
I don't know. People ever up there is like, dude, it's nothing but fucking farmhouses and blah, blah, blah. There'll be something. There'll be something. There'll be some weird place to get something to eat, some weird fucking tourist attraction. It's like when I drove across Nebraska. At one point, there's like this fucking footbridge that goes across – is that the 80? It's the 80. I was just like, what the fuck is this thing? And it went to some sort of weird, you know, Wyatt Earp type of, you know, Native American sad Western fucking tourist attraction. And I remember just seeing that and these fucking like flocks of geese flying in V's.
You don't see that
like World War II bombers. Like there was so many of them.
Yeah, but you know when people don't realize when you're in Los Angeles and you just see shit stuff all the time everywhere. Seeing quote unquote nothing is really calming. We're just like, yeah, there's just just trees, or it's like a, you know, the same. I feel
or
like
nobody.
It's almost like a, yeah, nobody, or it's just like a, it's like a recycled cartoon background. It's the same barn that's at the 45 degree angle that they don't. They're like, well, there's no point in taking it down because what are we gonna do with it? So just let it fall.
Oh, that's my dream. And my wife would never live out there. I would love to fucking live out there. She has the whole house and then the detached barn. That I turn into a drum room, cigar bar slash sports bar. I have my old truck and my whatever late model car in there. And then that's fucking it. I'm good.
Just get a vacation home.
Huh?
Just get a vacation home.
Well, how much does that fucking cost? And I'm not there.
It depends
on.
Got to
loan it out to other people. Then they're banging and I'm watching them on their TV. Dude, what do I care? I don't give a
you
fuck.
You watch me bang my wife in your barn? I don't give a
that's
shit.
That's on you, you fucking weirdo.
Oh, you want to see my balls here? I'll just hold them right up on the camera. That's
I don't give a fuck.
I don't give a fuck. I think that's a perfect place
Dude,
to end.
Fuck them. Yeah, that's it.
That's it.
Hey, you want to watch the show? Don't worry.
I don't care.
I'll just make another one. I don't give a fuck.
Okay, I'm the guy. So it's me. So I'm the asshole now. Is that it? I'm the asshole.
It's all me. All right, thank you for having me on.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.